It's Friday, November 1st, 2019, and you're listening to episode 529 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 48 minutes.
You have to ask yourself why you're doing it.
Yes.
As a game master. So you're running this game, and we'll say that we need to bolt something onto it, like a relationship thing.
Sure.
In a game that doesn't have relationship rules.
Like D&D.
Like D&D, yeah. Are you doing it because the players are exploring these relationships and they kind of want some more mechanical stuff? Or are you doing it because one time, four games ago, one player asked out one NPC because it was a funny scene and it was never returned to again.
And damn it, now we must codify it.
Yeah, now we have to put rules and stuff around
it. That was one of the things. Look, I got love for old school D&D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I owned the original plain old D&D, no addition, no advance.
You own Gary Gygax's brain.
I do.
Ooh.
It's literally in a jar of formaldehyde. But, you know, the first edition I played...
I haven't gotten to see this yet. Where is it?
You haven't been on the show long enough.
Yeah.
And seriously, I know, but I mean, it's like...
It has vast powers.
You have to help Dan move at least once before you see it. He doesn't plan on moving anytime soon. Yep. Right? So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
You know, I got love for old school D&D, but damn, one of the things that drove me nuts was every supplement book and every issue of Dungeon/Dragon magazine was more charts.
Yes.
I mean, you couldn't figure out anything in the game. I mean, they had a chart. If you took a deuce, they had a chart so you could figure out what kind.
Because you're not supposed to be creative. The game is creative for you. You know,
yeah, which is
modules,
I mean,
and charts and stuff. All you do is you're supposed to make decisions.
Yeah, and react to things that... It's kind of interesting because one of the things that D&D, I guess, I'm going to say more did than does. I guess it still does to an extent. Doesn't? Yeah, I don't even know how I want to conjugate that. And they're not the only ones that do this. Is it did quite a bit to lock in the GM.
Right.
Because if you killed something, there was a treasure chart. And you had rolls to see what would happen. And sometimes if the GM was really playing hard to the rules... The GM did not know what you were going to loot any more than you did. And there was one guy I was playing under who was using the hard loot rules of, I think it was second edition. And I killed some random thing, and it had like a 1 in a million chance of dropping a magical item. I rolled that chance, or he rolled that chance because he was rolling the treasure. And then he started rolling, what are its stats? What was like a +4 weapon with a secondary trait? And then it was intelligent plus a secondary trait. And it just kept exploding. And by the time it was done, I had this dagger that was more powerful than my character. And my character wasn't level 1. I mean, it was absurd. I'm like Krang's body at this point. I am just carrying this knife from between its adventures. I mean, I am the lesser party in this. And that was straight up according to the rules. It's been enough time. I can't tell you exactly what the rules were. But that's how it played out. And it was weird in that it was kind of constraining him. Now, of course, duh. In any given moment, he could have chosen not to use those rules, you know.
But the rules are the rules, Dan.
Well, and some people will take that stance. I mean, some people...
Those people are dumb.
I think they're certainly inflexible. I don't know if I'd go quite to dumb. I mean, because I don't know that I want to jump down the bad, wrong, fun thing.
No, they're having bad, wrong, fun.
But the point being that, I mean, yeah, obviously you could eject any of these rules.
Mm-hmm.
But as the game was presented, this is what the GM was supposed to do.
Right.
I mean, Gary Gygax himself said, screw these rules over 10 ways to Sunday, which is why I've always found the position of you have to play the rules as written is interesting. When Gary Gygax himself...
Interesting is a good word for it.
Yeah, sure. When Gary Gygax himself said, I want you to eject these rules one by one until you have a homebrew.
Yeah.
And I mean, that...
His whole thing was about you play his game because, A, he wants money. I don't like him. Two, to inspire you to get into it, to understand.
I mean,
the ultimate goal is you make a game for your group.
Yeah,
And then you run a convention.
Yep.
And then you publish, and then you're the next Gary Gygax. I mean, that's his flow chart.
Sure.
But, I mean, kind of backing off that a little bit, but yeah, no, that's his intention, because that's what he did, is he made a game designed for his group.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1970s to early 80s, the sample size of either actual or wannabe Gary Gygaxes was 1. Right? I mean, it's so I certainly wasn't large at any rate. And so his story made sense, you know, that of course, this is how you do it. That's how he did it. Mm-hmm. This is surely how the market's going to play out. And there's a reason why his is a household name. And while so many other people who have made good games themselves,
they didn't do it first.
Yeah, I mean, they're not as well known. Because
and they didn't write the book about how to make money doing it.
Right.
Because that's how you make money. You write the book and sell the book.
I'm not a big fan of the wooden, literal interpretation of any RPG. Right. Because I think everyone's going to find situations where the rules just don't fit your style. They don't fit your...
What we're talking about here is two halves of a thing.
Yeah.
The first half is you have a rule system for your players and you're playing. Yep. And there's a lot of stuff in there you don't like or doesn't work. That's the first half, is that you rip that stuff out or ignore it. I'm running Blades in the Dark right now. There's this whole thing, like multiple chapters about gangs and their influence and their project clocks and what they're doing. And it is like five pages of paperwork. And it is really interesting. Yeah. And I don't do on it. Nothing. I do nothing on it because, oh my God, I'll just decide.
Yeah.
You know, it's unnecessary and extraneous, even though I love the system. The second half of that, the other side of that coin, is saying, okay, I have eliminated all the stuff that does not work. Now I want to add stuff that will work.
It kind of goes to your question of why are you looking to do this?
Right.
And part of that answer could be you're not getting the feel that you're trying for with the game.
Sure.
Or the players aren't getting the feel. Something isn't right. Maybe that something isn't right because you've cut out half of the book and now it's balanced a little off.
Yeah.
But something isn't right. I think one of the big things that say something isn't right on a lot of story types is hit points.
Yeah.
Hit points don't go well for certain story types. Some story types they do. Something like a Power Rangers or a wrestling game or something. Sure. You have a character that is beaten down and then suddenly will rally back up and fight. Hit points don't work well for that type of story.
Yeah, I guess
a lot of other systems do work for that.
I don't know. D&D had healing surges and people hated those, but that's what it was you rally up and...
Yeah.
You are just as powerful with one hit point as you are at full.
Exactly, yes.
You are hitting something until it falls.
I say exactly. It's the old take on D&D. Do you know what the difference is between a dragon with full hit points and a dragon with one hit point? And the answer is nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even worse in video games. When you're fighting bosses, like big bosses,
they get more powerful.
They get more powerful the more you hurt them.
Yeah.
As you're burning your resources.
As you are getting weaker.
It goes back to one of my favorite jokes. What do you call the doctor that graduated with the lowest GPA?
A doctor.
Yeah.
It is one of those things that kind of bugs me in those types of stories. Mm-hmm. Hit points just don't work. So let's say you're playing a game that has hit points. And that's kind of a big part of the game. That's not a minor balancing thing. Would you suggest throwing it out and doing a completely different system? Or would you want it to be something that is that core to the system?
Or from like the standpoint of the epic poems, I'm going through, and I realize I'm somewhat oversimplifying here, but Hector was okay until he wasn't. Achilles was fine until he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Beowulf was fine until he wasn't. But conversely, I mean, let's take Power Rangers as one type of storytelling. On the opposite side,
and
let's
Power Rangers and wrestling, I think, are a very good comparison storytelling.
Well, sure. I mean, they honestly tell similar kinds of stories. But let me go with a very different thing. Of somebody wants to do a really realistic Vietnam game. Do hit points really work for that? I mean, I mean,
maybe you have three, which is dead.
Yeah, but I mean,
Skies of Glass is a good example of a way that you can deal with something like that. It doesn't have hit points. You get the wounds. And when you have a wound, you can tell it mechanically.
Right.
I can't move as fast. I can't shoot as accurately.
Sure.
And considering the narrow range of your bonuses to begin with, that can be a huge deal. So
another thing on this topic, take hit points, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, should we take rule mechanics and excise them in whole / replace them fully? What if you take existing rules and just reinterpret them? So hit points is an example of this.
If you're at 50% now, you get a negative.
Well, no, not even that. But
you're
like,
bloodied now.
Well, think of it this way. D&D, your character has 30 hit points. Whatever. Yeah,
sure.
I look at a D&D character. I look at my monsters, if I'm not just making up and deciding. And they actually have numerical hit points.
Yeah.
I also look at the characters, 30 hit points. They get 5 knocked off. Well, I don't care about that. right? To me, they've just lost a small amount of hit points. So it's how I'm describing them. It's how I'm telling the player, okay, you rolled a d20, you are as powerful as can be, and you got 5 hit points knocked off, you swing and you whiff. You just totally miss. Well, I mean, that orc, he punched you in the face. I mean, you're big, tough, you took it, but, you know, you're stumbling back a little bit. I use that as a mechanical gauge for myself.
There's a long-running thing with D&D in particular, not just D&D, but D&D in particular, that asks the question of what exactly is a hit point?
Right.
Is it actually the damage you're taking, or is it the stress that you took?
Is it someone being battered down? Right. And especially in the earlier editions, it was a little more open to interpretation. Now, in later editions, you know, the way they started to describe how healing affected hit points and such, it became very clear that if you have 30 hit points, your health is 100% divided by 30. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the gauge of your health.
Yeah, fate is pretty clear that it's not your actual injuries or your harm. It's because they even call it stress.
But when
it's the stress you're taking to avoid.
But when Wizards did the D20 and D20 revised for Star Wars, they went the other direction. They said that your, what I guess is closest thing to hit points in that game, it was you being worn down. It was your luck running out.
Right.
So you're not actually getting hit by the blaster. It's missing you, but your guts, your luck, your fortune, whatever it is running out. You know, that's draining. And if somebody critted, you actually had a second pool that was much smaller. Like you might start with like 10 and only gain like 1 point per level. So this never shifts all that much. I mean, even whelp rolls, you're like maybe 15, 20 points. And that's your actual injuries. That's not luck. That's you getting shot. You know, you now have a hole in your gut. Right. And that comes out of a completely different pool. And I found it interesting because they just sort of owned and internalized that long-running debate in D&D of what is a hit point.
Yeah.
And said, no, it is just your fortune getting worn down. Whereas D&D seems to have taken the path of, no, it really is your health being drained away by a million bites from a dragon somehow. And I'm not clear on that. But
one of the mechanics I really liked in Hex that I think, Hollow Earth, that I think you could add into something like a D&D for what you're describing. Let's say you have 4 hit points. You have a value that is 2. That is, I don't remember what they call the name of it. But if you take that much damage, you pass out.
Mm-hmm.
You're not dead, you're not dying, you just took such a dramatic hit, you lost half of your health, you're unconscious.
Right.
That is a intense hit. I like that. If it's something that, let's say you have 30 points, if you take 15 hit points all at one time, that should be enough that you're out of it, which I know a lot of people would be screaming because this is, D&D is more of a...
Well, D&D's toyed with that.
Statistical, you know.
There have been editions of D&D that had rules like if you took 20 points of damage from I think it was a single source or something, that there was a shock roll that it could... Yeah,
and probably a chart.
I don't remember if there was a chart, but there certainly was a numerical set of, you know, this many over under does...
Honestly, in this case, I like it as a shock roll because then you also get the opportunity for, from a story standpoint, you just got bashed. There is a very good story that could be told from you got bashed and you're knocked unconscious. There is another story that can be told from you got bashed and you gritted it and now you're pissed.
Yeah. There's a problem, though, with playing in a system that is really reliant on hit points and removing the hit point concept.
It rebalances everything.
Yeah.
Because
so it's too core spells. To the system.
Yeah.
There's a million and one spells. What are we going to do? Rewrite them all?
Yeah. There's a million and one, you
pole
know.
Arms.
Pole arms. I was going to say, halberds and pole arms and that you got to replace. Yeah. And so that's another thing you have to look at is how big a hole are you excising from your game?
Yeah.
Because remember, going back to it's a coin. It's a two-sided coin. Part of it is removing.
Yeah.
Part of it is adding. You can do either or both.
Yeah, I look at Mutants and Masterminds, one of the earlier editions, basically did that. They pulled out the hit points and they added in, you know, you have types of damages and you mark wounds and things that is very much like Savage Worlds. And eventually they became more like Savage Worlds. But to do that, they had a whole team that had to go back and figure out the rebalance. And that meant a lot of math had to be done.
And not a whole lot of home game masters want to do that.
Yeah, some do, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
Well, I think at that point, I mean, you could work out a conversion of something like for D&D, and I'm sure somebody's already done this, every die that goes into something we'll assume represents the single unit of a hit die. So if you have a sword that does 2d6 damage, we're going to assume that's two die of damage, okay, 2 points of damage. And so at third level, you have three dice worth. And now you take that to some kind of like wound chart where, you know, I've got three levels of resistance.
Just re-roll the character.
Oh, I believe me, I'm not saying you're 100% right. Okay, yeah, you're 100% right. I'm not saying you're wrong. But
I got to do my taxes once a year. Really, I don't want to do my taxes two times
sure, a year. Sure. I guess my point being, though, I think there are ways that are better versus worse to try and rebuild a house starting with the foundation instead of the roof, where I think it is possible to yank out, for example, the hit points from D&D, and you're not going to avoid bloodshed, but I think you can limit the violence you're doing to the game.
Has anyone ever been running a campaign and just stopped the system you were on and went to a new system? Had the characters remade in a completely different system?
Yes, two games. One I was playing and one I was GMing. One I was GMing was a Battletech game where I didn't realize how off the rails the Time of War was. And so I scrapped it and said, nope, we're going back to second edition of MechWarrior. And I know they've got the new Destiny or whatever it's called rules out now for Battletech for the character side. I'm actually even in on that beta, but to be brutally honest, I haven't read the rules yet. So I have no comment. They're supposed to be much more rules light than a Time of War was. But then there wasn't there a game that we played that Dave or one of those guys was running? And partway through, they yanked out the system and had us remaking something else. It was a fantasy game. And
part, is it the one with the magic cards?
I did something like that. And partway through,
we started that system.
And then, partway through, I thought we rebuilt the characters. And originally, it was one thing, and then we redid them in Savage Worlds or vice versa. We started in Savage Worlds and redid them in something else.
It was all a version of Cortex, but it was like a homebrew
version. Okay, well, I can give you an example that I came in after this occurred. But one of the groups of people we used to play with, their primary game, indeed really about the only game they played, was a sci-fi game that was homebrewed that had some elements of fantasy in it. And the history of this game was that they had started off playing West End Star Wars, which has a fairly high upper power level. Like, you can get really ridiculous in that game. I mean, it beat Shadowrun to the buckets of D6. And they had reached a point where their characters had sort of exceeded the stories that you could fit within that universe. And so they had to start revamping it. And so they took their characters and their concepts and they remade them using a homebrew system that was designed from the ground up. When you start at level one, you are already so insanely beyond what anyone should be. Darth Vader is a level one character. You know, that's how this game worked. And then you just went up from there. But it was a wholly new system that was basically meant to keep telling that story. So I've seen it. I mean, it's not a common occurrence for me.
Yeah, no, I've only seen the opposite of starting a game, realizing the system was really bad, and that killed the campaign.
Because
who wants to go through all the work? I mean, you've already gone through all the work.
Well, on top of that, people may have concepts about their characters that require those rules.
Yeah.
You know, I was playing a guy who was specifically a specialist mage who specialized down this, and now we're switching to a game where without rewriting the entire magic system, that just plain ain't workable.
Right.
You know, it's just not even in there. So, yeah, I get why most people would just scrap the game, because you may have invalidated the character concepts, the NPCs, the group template. I mean, everything that's in there.
It was painful enough doing Blades in the Dark when we would have a new rule release. Because the first time we were playing Blades in the Dark, it was when the game wasn't released yet.
Oh, yeah.
So then there would be a new rules release we'd bring in, and there were some massive changes.
Was that ever a problem? Did you guys ever come in? It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, Pat, your class is totally nerfed.
Only for one character.
Yeah. Okay. One character was completely... the entire concept, they had to re-roll.
The class was rewritten like three times majorly. Everything else was more or less fine. So maybe a little tweak.
Yeah, it was a lot of little things here and there. There was only that one case that really was ground up rebuild because it just didn't work anymore.
Huh. It was way too powerful.
We could have had more of that. There was only thieves was the only option for a gang type. And then more of them were released. If we would have realized, we're actually more assassins that would have
right.
led to a lot of rebuilding. But I think we looked at it and we said we don't want to rebuild, so we're right. just stuck yeah. with what we were playing.
Well, and that's the thing, too. The player who, in this case, who had to keep redoing her character, this is very frustrating for her. It is super frustrating. When I think of the concept on the whole of like, hey, we've been playing this campaign for months, years, whatever, and now we're going to do a totally new system. I'm not even talking about D&D going from 3 to 4,
yeah.
right? Where you can, they may even provide conversions for you. It's just number conversions.
We're going from D&D to Dungeon World.
Right. We're going from D&D and we're going to be playing Fate, you know?
That's it's a like far a bigger totally... jump than Dungeon World.
So yeah. as a player, I'd be like, let's say I've never played Fate before. Fate's sure. this new hot thing. I'd be like, so we have to learn a whole new system. I mean, a whole new concept of a system, right? Well,
and that, I can't use the dice I already have.
I can't use the dice I already have. Mm-hmm. Totally new character sheets, all that. A lot of us are now talking about just making new characters, which is legit. So now I'm in this certain mindset of change and advancement. And I don't mean character advancement. I mean, like, just sort of moving forward with my life. No. When I personally am in that mode, I don't look backwards. So my thought would be, why are we converting? Why don't we do something new? Because now I'm already in the mindset of, I don't want to do my taxes twice in 1 year.
Yeah.
People are already starting to talk about making new characters instead of converting. Everybody's kind of really looking at just re-rolling. Well, why don't we just re-roll the whole concept here? Why don't we play?
I don't know. I guess it depends on how attached you are to the characters and
sure.
stuff.
Yeah.
I
mean, let's say you've been playing for 3 years and you lose the GM. Someone else steps in, but they don't run that system. They run this other system.
And don't get me wrong. I get the sort of, we've been doing this a long time and we are very in love with it and we don't want to lose it. To me, it just changes my mindset. Now I have to go into, instead of I am playing and enjoying, I am creating and changing. I don't want to do that in half measures. Why create and change just to adapt? Why not create, capital change, do something new and move on? But that's just how I am.
Yeah, I was saying, I can't say you're wrong. I mean,
I'm not.
I mean, I totally get that if in any given campaign I was to rip out the system, some people may just be in the mindset of recreate. Other people may say, I don't think the new rules really capture what I wanted to get out of this character. And they're going to create something new, I think.
Well, and there's a domino effect, too. Like,
oh, sure.
Like I said, you know, you've got a couple of people. I know, I look at my group for something like this. I know I have a couple of people in there who will say, you know, cool, like the campaign. I really don't want to fill out this form and do this conversion thing. I'll just make a new character.
Well, yeah. Well,
so now the dominoes are starting to fall.
Right, right. I think, though,
dynamics change.
I've played some characters where I definitely would have kept their story going. I think their essence is easy enough to capture in a variety of systems that I would have kept their story going. Like, there's a whole lot of characters looking back that they either weren't that great or their story's told and it's over, and I really don't know where I would go with it.
Yeah.
But there's other characters that I really feel like their story's half told. Gnarl's one of them. I really feel like his story is half told.
Going to that same game, if
that's why you need to write furry fanfic.
I know, it's exactly why I need to write furry fanfic.
I've actually done it.
But, well, actually, Wayne told me about something I didn't know. There's a real easy way to match yourself up with voice actors for fiction, like narrators, because I'm not a great like read out of the book, you know, books on tape type narrator. I want to see if I can find somebody who has like this voice that sounds like has like this old man kind of like a voice of wonder and magic to do a dramatic reading of Gnarl Saves Christmas, because it's about that time of year.
That's a campaign going back to where if you wanted to run something with, I would go back to that character and I would remake it in D&D 5th edition. It wasn't my first character, but it was my first character in, I think we were running D&D 3. It wasn't.
I don't know, you guys were running.
It was like
the rules,
3.5 or so.
Yeah, it was D&D 3.5, but
and it wasn't me running the rules because I had never played it. But I had no idea how to build a character because it was my first D&D game.
Forget. Let's say you said, you know, we're not going to play D&D at all. You said, okay, we're playing Fate.
Right.
Gnarl's a simple enough character, at least in terms of what makes him work for me, that I would have no problem pretty quickly adapting him into Fate.
Pat would have had a major, major problem because it's all his.
Yeah.
from a mechanic, it's all his spell list. Like a
what, Mistform?
Yeah, Mistform.
Well, yeah, except he had 20 pages of other spells he never used.
I know, yeah. He needed a whole lot to read prior to choosing Mistform.
Right. Yeah. What's funny is I forgot about it until right now. Gnarl and Sir William have been rebuilt in another system. Dan and I didn't rebuild it. We sat down in the game and played them in a wrestling game at one of the cons.
Yeah, we did. We did. Yeah. It was run by John Walls, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So that game, they've been rebuilt in another system.
Oh, please tell me Sir William was the hype man. Was he the hype man? Was he the promoter? Or was he the actual wrestler?
He was actually a wrestler.
He was a wrestler. Man. But it's a character whose story isn't told and whose concept I think I could rework. And no, things wouldn't be exactly the same. And there's other game systems where I think I would need concessions from the GM to make it work.
Yeah.
But
see, that's another problem I have, because I cannot think of an example, but in my mind, I have a feeling that I've been part of this before. I can't think of any specifics, but I just seem to remember, I don't know if I was running it or I was playing it, probably playing it, and we did a conversion and so many concessions had to be made.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. To where it like blew balance out of the water and it really kind of messed up the flow of the mechanics. So
no, you're not wrong. Yeah. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I don't have a story behind that. Like I said, I just remember the fragment of
the concept.
So that's something that you should look out for too.
Sure. Sure. I'm just saying there are characters I've played that I could and would continue after the jump.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right that I think making that jump, it raises a whole lot more questions than it answers.
Yeah. There are characters that I look at and I would play them after a jump because I think other systems would be a better fit for those characters.
Mm-hmm.
I built them in one game, but what I wanted to do, I was never able to really have come out in that game mechanically. But I look at another system I played since that I could create that character really easily, and I would love to play the characters again.
Yeah. The more I think about this, though, when you're converting a character, as a player, try not to ask for concessions that will break the rules, and as a game master, try not to allow them. If you're making a switch and converting stuff over, try to make them fit in the box, because otherwise they're going to break the box.
Well, yeah, especially because every time you make most concessions, especially if you are not super familiar with the rules, and you're a very mathematically minded person, you're probably going to break it in the process. Well, I mean, you're going to say, yeah, okay, I'll give you this. And then we don't realize is that stacks with another thing, stacks with another thing, stacks with another thing.
Well, look at D&D. D&D was, people are going to laugh at me when I say this because I'm not really serious about it, but D&D is fairly balanced. And what I mean by that is not the fighter mage who's more powerful, but I mean, there's a certain amount of hit points people have. There's a certain amount of damage they output. You kind of know what you're getting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So let's take Sir William, who is a foppish bard.
Yeah.
Who's fun to play, great character, and fairly effective. And let's take Gnarl.
Not the way I built him, he wasn't.
No. And let's take Gnarl, for example. Gnarl was way overpowered because you were using the creative beast rules and stuff. And it was not that he was overpowered. He's min-maxed.
Yeah.
Because of the way that those optional rules go. So now let's convert that over to any given system you want, like Fate or whatever.
Sure.
Sir William, pretty easy to make a new character.
Yeah.
Don't have to go outside of any of the rules and any of the systems I know about. Gnarl, you've really got to bend some stuff. So now when the rubber hits the road, now Gnarl is Superman and Sir William's the shoveler.
Yeah, well, I think the best way you could get around that using something, let's take Dresden as an example.
Right.
You know, Sir William would work pretty well. You could loosely base him.
Well, he would get a ton of fate chips, too.
Well, I think both characters could easily be made in Dresden.
Because I'd say Dresden, probably where I'd start with Gnarl's, I'd find an analogous idea, which is Gnarl's probably going to stat out something like a werewolf who simply doesn't transform. He's forever in that, you know, lupine form. And so for him, it was canine. But the point being, though, that
details,
it's
furries.
Yeah. You know, exactly. The point is that I can still get my fervert on.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can walk into a PetSmart. Nobody's going to blink an eye.
No.
You walk into a restaurant, though. No, you're f-ing out.
Yep.
And Sir William's like, no, he's my emotional support werewolf.
Noel, yes. that will be one of his additions, is we'll stat out.
And then the bigger D is like, hug him. And then Gnarl's like,
well, you know how, like, in Dresden, like, some of your traits have to be interrelated? Yeah, some of your aspects have to be interrelated. I will have one of wears an orange vest, and that is tied directly to...
And now you can get on airplanes,
exactly.
As long is you have Sir William.
And whenever he invokes it,
Sir William drives you insane.
Exactly. Whenever he invokes it, that gives him, what is it called, tagging or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
That gives him a positive tag, gives me a negative tag. Yeah. So whenever he invokes it, he's all cuddling with my furriness.
And you can't stop
and
him.
And I can't stand, and I can't stop
kicked
him.
Out of the restaurant.
Right. Yeah. And so he gets a +2 to all of his checks, and I've got a -2 on all of my checks.
Because you're all pissed off.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm just sitting there sulking, chewing on a bone from Schnucks, which is the only reason I allow him to do it.
Yeah.
Because he always gets me those big
Chad, when are you going to run this game?
I feel kind of gross talking about it, to be honest with you. So.
Yeah, so
how about a Fear of the Con?
No, I don't think so. This is kind of squicking me out, to be honest. I kind of regret going down this path now.
This is going to be a later Patreon game. And it's going to be our first negative episode AP.
Nice.
As hard as Brodor tries, we've not gotten there yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of the things we've talked about, it all goes back to the one question I ask in the beginning is, what is your goal?
Yeah, why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this? What is your goal in doing it? So if you're doing it because there's not a right feel to it, what is the feel that you want to create? That is your goal. And same thing if you're switching systems because if you're trying to pull something out because it's not working and your goal is just make it feel better, maybe pulling an entire chunk of the system out isn't the best way to go.
Yeah.
Maybe a better way to reach that goal is to find a system that works better.
Yeah. So yeah, flip the coin and just add.
Dale,
or just add a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to loop back about 25 topics here. I want to ask you something. Because earlier you did bring up the very fair point that there may be an existing system that already does 99% of what you're looking for.
Sure.
Okay. And I gave the counterpoint of I don't have, and nobody has, an encyclopedic knowledge or fully exhaustive knowledge of all the games that are out there.
Sure. Or maybe it does it really well, but it's not how it's going in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that.
But let's say that I decide I don't want to build something here. I want to use something that's somebody else built because I don't have the time or the interest, or I want to know it was at least kind of play tested.
Sure.
How would you go about trying to find that system? Because one of the struggles I've had is, and this is true in damn near any community and 10 times as much online, is the vocal minority is a bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
If someone said, start a thread on RPGNet, nope.
Well, or even if they aren't assholes. Yeah. Let's say that, they're not. Let's say you find a community that isn't assholes. There is usually a hive mind.
Sure.
Where it's just like, okay, I'm going to go here and ask, and it's a fate community.
If you ask him,
the answer is fate across the board, no matter what.
Sure. Oh, yeah, that was what I was going to say. Yeah. You ask in certain areas, the answer is always going to be fate. The answer is always going to be Savage Worlds. Mm-hmm. The answer is always going to be GURPS.
Some places, it will be whatever the flavor du jour of the RPG in crowd is at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to have a discerning mind when you ask for help.
Honestly, I don't think I can give a solid answer other than just play a bunch of games and try them out. The place I'd go to first would probably be either Fantasy Grounds or Roll20. This way you can play a bunch of games online. You never have to leave your house and, you can set up, five different games in the week.
Don't ask for advice so much as just try it out and learn by doing.
Yeah.
I think that might be a fair answer to this because this is not always going to be true because it depends on how bad the GM is. But I think even with a relatively bad GM, I can read past that and see the system.
Exactly.
The first time I played a Savage Worlds game, I was convinced that it was the most complicated, horrible system in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It is still a horrible system because of...
it's just horrible Shaken.
Yes, because of Shaken. But it is not a complicated system. It was just a really bad GM and a really bad experience.
And Wayne's promotion of Savage Worlds is brought to you by the podcast Gaming with Gage.
I say Gage is a big Savage Worlds fan.
The biggest. An apologist. Like, he is...
I'm shaking.
Do you see that ladder? Somebody's coming in through the window. That's Gage. He's running Savage Worlds for us, or else.
Unfortunately, I got the heater right there.
No, you're shaking. You can't.
That's right. I can't. I couldn't even open that drawer. I'm shaking.
Nope. Yep.
Yeah. I think my issue with the idea of going out and finding all these games on, like, Roll20 and things is...
Mm-hmm.
At a con, I have no problem sitting down at a whole table full of people that I don't know. I don't want to spend my time online with people I don't know.
It's called YouTube. Do some research. Find a list of games that sound interesting.
I was going to offer an alternative of, that's why I listen to APs.
Yeah, that's another good one as
that's
well.
That's how I find a lot of systems.
Yeah.
I really shouldn't say this because I'm on an AP that I absolutely love and I think everyone should listen to. One episode is 4 hours long.
That depends on the
AP. Holy shit. Who listens to these?
So there's somebody that's going through our back catalog.
Oh my god, that's 5 years worth of content.
What?
No, I mean like if you add it up like hour by hour by hour, that was like 5 or 6 years.
I was like, no, we've been around 13 and a half.
No, yeah.
So all right, so somebody's going through our backlog.
I'm so sorry.
And they took something that I'm 99% sure you said, Chad.
Probably.
Which they said, they quoted, role playing's not a spectator sport.
Right.
And in light of the success of various APs, obviously the biggest one being Critical Role.
Yeah.
He said, you know, something to the effect of, well, that advice didn't age terribly well. And you know what? Yeah. I actually still stand by it. You know,
I still stand by it, but
I don't get it.
I don't see it as an AP. So here's my thing. When I said that, I was not talking about APs. That wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
I was talking about going to a store and someone is physically there. Or maybe you're at home and say, oh, well, I brought my girlfriend and she's just going to sit in the corner and watch.
Yeah, I'm like, crochet or something. Yeah.
The difference is when you're doing an AP, you're sitting around with your friends playing the game. The person isn't in the room standing over your shoulder. Mm-hmm. You don't think about, I mean, maybe in the back of your mind, you're thinking about the fact it's being recorded.
Yeah.
But you don't think about the person that's there.
Oh, certainly.
Somebody standing in the corner watching you is just awkward.
A role-playing game is participatory.
If
I don't want someone in the room not participating.
I'm with you. If
that's how it is. We have an audience of 10,000. Cool. Because they're on the other side of a recording.
Yeah. They're not in the room making it awkward. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. They're awkward, not awkward. Anger, happiness, whatever floats your boat, role-playing games are participatory. If you're standing in the room when I'm running a game, you are playing. I am bringing you in.
There have in my life been very few people, very few, that I have been sufficiently comfortable with where they have consistently been there but not playing and it didn't unnerve me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can think of maybe two or three. In my entire, I'm an old, entirely too long history, like almost 30 years now or whatever, of actually maybe it's more than 30 years. Yeah, I'm old. All right, so more than 30 years of role-playing. Yes, I realize there's some of you grognards that are sitting there mocking my 30-some-odd years. But the point being, though, that in all of those years, I can think of maybe two or three people total where them spectating did not unnerve me. And
I wouldn't be able to help myself.
Yeah,
I mean, even if it is a bad thing, I'm with them, where it's just like, you know, I have some crazy goblin
in the early Fear of the Cons when we had those two World War II vets that were serving the beer, and one of them, by the nth con we'd had there, they were taking a real interest in what we were doing and they really loved our community because you guys are outstanding, credits to you guys for this, you know, but they really loved our community and loved the way that you guys were treating them and interacting with them. They started walking around looking at the games and asking about them. I remember, Chad, you and I think you were playing and I was running a Star Trek ship-on-ship battle game, and they came over and asked about it, and you're like, why don't you grab one of the consoles and sit down? And you tried to rope them into it. I'm the same way, man. If we were running that AP and Johnny G just drops in out of nowhere for some reason, or he's...
We're finding a chair.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, here's your NPC. This is who you're playing, because you're not going to just sit here and comment. I don't know, but...
You're not going to stand there in silence and be happy. I'm going to make you miserable.
Along with, you're going to suffer with all of us.
Yes.
But I don't remember what the relevance of that was to hijacking role-playing systems, but nonetheless.
But it had to be said.
It did have to be said. Mm-hmm. It was just on my mind because I just saw somebody commenting on episode like one or two today. And
The comment still stands. Role-playing games are not a spectator sport. Live.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry to whoever, I forget this person's name who's working through our back catalog. I'm so sorry. Don't. Just like skip forward to like, actually about when Wayne started.
Because that was our high watermark. It's been downhill from there. So.
No, that I think is when the show really found its solid footing.
See, that's our listeners. You know, they walk uphill both ways. Yeah. Our original ones walk up to Wayne. Our new ones walk backwards up to Wayne.
Oh, right. So, okay. Yeah, and then you have those few valleys.
The show reached its high point, and then I started bringing it down.
Yeah.
And then we got Brodor.
Wayne, you are the high point. You are absolutely the high point. You are the high watermark.
I actually made a joke about that on the Discord at one point of just don't listen to my first first episode because it was horrible. And
this is about comic books. Yeah, immediately totally someone jumped in and not an interview.
Yeah, someone immediately jumped in and corrected me and said that, you know, they really enjoyed that one. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
All right, with adapting rules, I think we've about run this one out. Wayne, do you have anything else that we...
No, I said the important thing is the question of what is your goal?
Yeah.
If you know your goal, then you can figure out the best way to meet it. Whether it's find a completely new system that does exactly what you're looking for, add in a little bit to it. Don't design a ridiculous Rube Goldberg machine when all you need to do is add a plus one.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you're changing so much to where you have to change the system... My advice is consider changing the game.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to, I'm not sure I 100% agree, sure. But I certainly think you could certainly sell me on that there's some hard questions to be asked here.
If I was the game master and we decided to do this and I knew I had to sell you, Dan, on it to get the rest of it going along, I would sell you on the totally not lie of, oh, we'll come back to this later.
Yeah. You know, later's never defined.
No. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about, you know, a system called the Rube Goldberg system.
Can you turn the board game Mousetrap into a tabletop RPG?
I still like the Venn diagram idea.
We're using that now that it's...
Yeah, I particularly like the idea of when you get two sections, you now have a functionality you can do.
You don't have the whole thing. Even one section.
And that's so much better than the project clocks in Blades, because the project clocks are...
It's all for nothing to done.
Yeah,
right.
I want to do this. How many sections are there on this clock? I'm like, I don't know. It's a gun that shoots webbing. How hard is that to make? I don't know. Well, this, you can, instead of saying how hard it is, you can say, well, it's got to be concealed, and it's going to have a whole lot of ammo, so that's going to be another section, and then it's going to do this. So now we define it.
I have to procure a gun.
Yep.
I have to procure some form of, like, carbon fiber web or right. goo or whatever it is. I have to get someone who's a gunsmith or a chemist to figure out how to merge the two. So,
And it's a Venn diagram, which immediately means it's good.
Yes, right. That's precisely. Or if not, good is at least in the middle of it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, if you're making a mech, first you fill in the one part for controls and another part for legs. And so, you know, that at that point, you can start walking around. You can't shoot. You can't fire anything.
Yeah, but you have the no most armor. Amazing pants ever.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. This was already in Wallace and Gromit.
Yep.
It'd be really good for building a base. So you have
having the, amazing mech pants?
Or a space station. I mean,
I'd never wear any other pants.
Well, why would you?
A base or a space station where you have these are your walls. These are your bathrooms. These are your sleeping arrangements.
Yep. This is your pants warehouse.
And you have to make the decision, besides just filling in a little section, which is the most important one?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Do I need my walls more or do I need my heating more because winter's about to hit?
So, you know, and I could think of pretty good parallels to that in playing survival, because I've really taken a shine to this sort of survival genre of games, games like Ark, 7 Days to Die, Conan Exiles, whatever. And when you drop a new base, what exactly are you going to put down first? Do you put down the foundations first? Do you put down some defenses first? Do you, you know, map out the borders first? It's a meaningful decision, and I could certainly see it translating to a tabletop RPG. All right, but since this one ran 2 episodes, let me loop back to the announcement we gave at the beginning, so it's in both shows. The Fear the Con Kickstarter is still live as of this, the second episode in the series, so be sure to get out there and get it backed. I don't know what the rewards will have been that we added.
I don't know if we will have made it by then, but it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, well,
we actually had a backer while we've been recording, because I did stop and check at one point, because I was hoping we would have crossed the line so I could say, we crossed it while we were recording, but
maybe
we got closer.
And this is going to be released quite a bit early, so maybe we will have reached it by the time that this goes out.
And that does remind me, just a quick aside, because we promoted Eric's Gamers Table Kickstarter.
Well, hold on one second. One more thing on Fear the Con. And remember to keep up with social media stuff, because even though this episode's going to be a week or two stale, Wayne and Chris are still making announcements on the Kickstarter, on Facebook, and on Twitter, and on Discord, keeping you up to date on what they're adding to the Kickstarter. So if you want to know what new reward levels have been dropped, because we're trying to trickle these out. So once again, check the show notes for a link to Fear the Con's Kickstarter. Okay, go ahead.
so
whatever crappy show.
Show and gamer
chintzy ass
stable, yeah. No pants mech wearing.
He's just embezzling all the money anyway.
I know, right? You know. I mean, it's all going up his nose.
Yeah. Or it is.
Butt,
yeah.
So. I mean, we're not going to see any of it.
No. Well, I mean, we're not up his nose, so how could we see it?
Well, we are up his butt.
I know, right? Anyway. So, Gamer's Table, want to give a shout out to Eric. He ran a very successful Kickstarter. He reached all but one of his stretch goals. And then after the Kickstarter ended, like an hour or so after it ended, one of his fans reached out to him and said, "Oh, crap, I missed the Kickstarter. Can I give you the money to make up for the last reward tier?" And he's like, "I am not going to say no because I'm not an idiot." So he said yes, and Gamers Table made all of their...
Includes Big 20, which is going to be...
Weekly.
Now is a weekly live, mm-hmm. interactive GM tip discussion, gaming advice kind of thing on Discord. I don't know where all he's streaming it. Eric's better.
Twitch. It's
Twitch.
It's a live show.
Twitch, not Discord.
Okay. Yep. It is a live show where game masters discuss... Inside baseball.
Right.
Yeah. Basically, they talk about what works. Eric and I have already been talking on his Discord about, like, he's going to pose a question to get things started, or there's going to be a theme for that evening. And it's going to be on Sundays on Twitch. And I'm sure we'll have a link at some point for it from 9 p.m.
I will get Eric to post the details somewhere public.
Yeah,
that I can
better
link from
than
the
me
show
barely
notes.
Remembering
so
it.
So what I'll do is I don't care.
It starts in November.
Yeah, I'll get him to put it on his Gamers Table blog or something. Right. I will get him to post the details somewhere we can link from the show notes.
And if you're not a regular listener to any of their shows, you'll still hear some familiar voices because Dan, Chad, and I have all agreed to be on the show.
Yeah. Right.
The Big 20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
he's got Gamers Table, fully funded. He's got Trench Monkeys, which is veterans talking about role-playing, like actual, not role-playing veterans, actual military veterans talking about military life and role-playing games. Big 20, which is the live show, and Resting Glitch Face, which is his exceedingly popular Shadowrun all-female squad AP.
Yeah, so check the show notes for links to all that good stuff.
But Fear the Boot's better.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's like, I don't even need to say it.
That's kind of redundant.
I mean, like Gage is coming through the window. Yeah. We're all shaking. Fear the Boot's better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We got the puppy.
Mm-hmm. GamingWithGage.com.
How long are these show notes going to be?
Oh my god, dude! It's the end of the episode. They can go forever.
Yeah, every product on Amazon will be linked in the show notes. I will link Game with Gage's show notes. Gage is a good guy. So anyway,
in spite of his opinions on Savage Worlds,
Only product you need to link on Amazon is Sojourn.
No, I agree, but we're going to wait for that until we get the Gnarl live reading. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch
you next time. Promote something quick.
No.
Bye.
Go to JohnBracer.com.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2019. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.